celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis. Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have Logan Orrick. He is an Olympic rower and a silver medalist. He was introduced to the sport, I believe, we'll fact check this with him, but introduced at age 12 after hearing stories of his dad and his uncle rowing in their youth, and Logan quickly excelled. He started to dominate. He was winning races. He was making friends, and he truly embodies the best parts rowing has to offer. Taking the opportunity to broaden his horizons, both athletically and academically, Logan took up a US scholarship to compete at the University of Washington in the United States. Not one for a slow swimmer, Logan made an immediate impact in his first racing season with the Huskies, rowing in the Varsity 8 across many regattas, notably including the IRA Championships, Head of the Charles Regatta, and the Henley Royal Regatta. He expanded upon those credentials last season by adding First Team All-American and All-Pac 12 titles. Logan, I might have missed some things there, but where things really started to fire up was in 2023. He qualifies for the Paris 2024 Olympics in the men's Coxless 4. I'm so pumped to talk about how you turned this dream into a reality. You're back in Washington, back in school, and you're now a proud Olympic medalist. That's crazy, and you're a young member of the New Zealand elite team. Your momentum is only building, and just found out this is Logan's first podcast episode, so it's almost like a time capsule too. So all that and more, Logan, thank you for being on Tall Poppy Talk today. And my first question is, where and how are you today?
Kia ora, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm in Seattle, Washington, so back in University of Washington grounds, and I'm doing wonderful.
What is funny is I'm on the East Coast, so right now it's a beautiful sunny day. It's still pretty warm. I think it's like 23 degrees Celsius, but I know the temperatures are going to turn soon. For you up in Seattle, like, how much longer do you have before things get really cold?
I think we turned into the fall a little bit quickly, quicker than last time, but it's, you know, it's just all about the rain and the cloudy days here. We don't get too far into the negatives, so yeah, it's just cooling down slowly and, you know, ready for the wet winter.
And is this your, am I right in thinking this is your third year at Washington, or is this your fourth?
This is my third year of competing, and I've already completed my undergrad, just with COVID. Obviously, all the years of study get muddled up, so I'm completing post-bachelor study and doing my third year of racing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I went to Rutgers, which is a college in New Jersey, and yes, yeah, it was like the undergrad kind of got done. I actually stayed in the States during that time and rowed, and then I was able to sneak a master's in. I say sneak because maybe you feel it too, where it's like you have limited time when you're an international athlete to get it done in your eligibility. So it's kind of feels a little bit like hodgepodge, but you're getting the degree and getting the qualifications. It just looks a little different.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was a wild time with the COVID, and that's great you're able to get a master's in, because I think you're right in saying it's sneaking it in, because like there's just different eligibility requirements and rules. So you did great to do that, and look, and Rutgers, you guys beat us in the football last weekend against Washington as well. So yeah, it's cool that you went to that school and had a good experience.
Thank you. Yeah, it's funny you say that. Rutgers has been trying, especially with football, for years, and I would like to thank the football team for probably why I got recruited, because for those listening who don't know, there's like a thing called Title IX where you have to spend money evenly between male and females, so that is why a lot of rowing opportunities, I feel like, come around, especially for women. For men, I do think it is a lot harder. There's not as many out there. Like, when you were choosing schools, did you feel like initially gravitated up towards like the upper northwest, or did you consider coming on the East Coast at all?
Yeah, when I first was getting approached for being recruited to colleges, I was approached by I guess four or five different ones, just because I had a good time when I was younger, and at the time I didn't want to pursue going to the States, so I kind of just put it to the side, and but I was kind of interested after that point and looked at the different colleges and their racing seasons, and then a year and a half after school when I actually decided I wanted to go to college. By that point, I'd already decided that Washington was more my style, more my culture, and why I wanted to, and if I was going to college, that was the only place that I was going to go to. So I'm really glad that I actually had that time after initially having been approached by recruiters that to step away, kind of see it from an outside perspective, and then kind of already make a decision before I even knew where I was going to go. So that was pretty cool.
That is really cool. And am I right in saying you're initially, like, you grew up, born in New Zealand, grew up in Australia, back to New Zealand, and now in the States? Is that kind of, have you been anywhere else, or is that everything?
No, these are the three countries I lived in. So, yeah, moved to Australia when I was 8. Lived there for 12 years until, I went to America in 2019, full 2019. Then, during the COVID 2020 year, I then packed my bags and moved to New Zealand, back to New Zealand, away from my parents. And and then I guess back and forth between America and New Zealand since.
And I assume you lived in Cambridge, like when you're in New Zealand.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So, yeah, all my family's from Auckland and a little bit from Murrinsville. So, not too far, which is nice. And parked up in Cambridge for the rowing.
I'm from Cambridge, like Cambridge High Girl, so the, and I haven't been back for a hot minute. If we're thinking Sunday brunch, where are you going?
Look, Ophelia is quite nice because it's just like it doesn't feel like Cambridge, so it's a good little step away from the environment.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, when I was looking at your Rowing New Zealand like athlete profile, which is very impressive obviously, it references not only like the world championship races, the Olympic medal, but also a bunch of interests, which I laughed because Fortnite is included in there as well. so Logan, if we are to kind of leave out the word athlete or rower, how would you describe yourself?
I'm very energetic, so I like doing plenty of different activities. And yeah, I guess Fortnite came from just like being able to recover from rowing training and still do something fun. So I don't know, a lot of us rowers are competitive outside of rowing too. So I played with guys here in the States, so I played with Campbell Crouch in Cambridge, and we would just play Fortnite and love playing split screen, competing with each other, and just like it was just an enjoyable downtime. But usually if I do actually have some spare time, I'd rather spend it out on the water, on a boat, diving, getting kaimoana. I love spear fishing, and just like anything to do with the ocean is really my proper downtime.
No way. So spear fishing, my brother-in-law does slash tries to do a bit of that. So difficult. And so for those listeners who maybe aren't familiar, what exactly is the objective? Like obviously you're trying to spear a fish, but like how do you go about that?
Yeah, well, it's like it's a very sustainable form of fishing because we're only selecting fish that we choosing to get on the day, correct sizing within all the regulations. But also it's just a really pure form. Like you're holding your breath, so you dive under the water, holding your breath the whole time. It's a lot of skill to like certain fish are a lot harder to get close to and close the gap to. Shoot the spear gun, and it's a really I think a pure form of hunting, especially in fishing compared to line fishing and everything where you're just on the boat and dropping the anchor. But no, it's a really nice connection to the ocean and the water and fulfilling, getting your own food and dinner, and the whole experience of that is really, really nice.
That's pretty cool. I think as well, I'm trying to like translate to how it must help with rowing. Think about it. If you're holding your breath, it's like the oxygen is being depleted to the muscles, which by the time you get to the last, like, I want to say 250, but probably like 500, 600 meters of a 2K, you're like, there's no oxygen. It's gone. We're in that. So maybe there's a little bit of like cross training happening there too.
Yeah, potentially. I guess it's just, and also practicing being calm under pressure. You have to really be about your wits, even though you're running out of oxygen and you're 10 meters underwater and on your last legs. But I guess in rowing, yeah, you got to make sure you still do everything you're trained to do and just not freak out, I guess.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question is like speaking about kind of the highest pressure there is the Olympic game. So what surprised you about like the Olympic experience? And then also what were the best bits? But maybe start with what surprised you about the whole experience.
In a positive or a negative way?
But both,
Okay.
like both are
Yeah.
fine, yeah.
Well, what surprised me positively was how, I guess, like, excited the whole environment was. So, like, just seeing, I remember the first day that, like, the crowds were rolling into the stands. It was like, I've been lucky enough to compete at a few regattas where there's been tens of thousands of spectators. But this regatta just seemed like when they all roll into stands, it was the energy was like building. And we weren't racing on the first day that the stands were getting filled, but you could just tell there was a buzz in the whole environment, and all the rowers were like really excited, and the event was just really, the atmosphere was amazing. And then I guess there wasn't any negative of the whole experience. I can't think of like it was just obviously, we just went from our hotel to the rowing course for a week and a half straight. We didn't go anywhere else, not even a supermarket. We were just like keeping things that we could control in our control. But that was also quite a unique, like, obviously looking back, it's like, okay, well, I like doing other things, so it was a bit boring, but it was also like a really focused and cool time to really just like dial in. So yeah, I can't even say that was a negative experience, but so we were very lucky to have a very like clean and great run, and just everything was a positive from my point of view.
Well, also you got a silver medal, which is crazy because in all of my research, I didn't actually check. How old are you, Logan?
I'm just turned 24.
Wild. Like when you think about starting rowing age 12, like obviously the Olympics is everyone's goal to actually get to the start of like the Olympic final. Obviously you're nervous, but is part of it just like, holy shit, I'm here, like, do you get any of that sense of like imposter syndrome, or are you just so focused? Like you said, it's a very like focused environment. You're not even really thinking about the gravity of the situation. Like, I know I'm rambling there, but just tell me
No,
some of your thoughts, please.
I like yeah. So I can get really focused, and I really get really dialed into exactly what I'm doing in the moment. So no, like being in the moment. But I made sure that told myself that I would, like, kind of at the start line, really take a moment to really reflect. And well, no, I couldn't reflect for that long, but really just take it in what the gravity of what I was doing, and more like, the great, like, obviously the Olympics means a lot to a lot of people, but really taking in the gravity of what the Olympics means to me. And like you said, like, yeah, the idea of, I guess, imposter syndrome being like, yeah, this has been like a goal for like maybe 7 or 8 years, can't exactly pinpoint it. So like to be in that moment was, yeah, surreal. And like, I guess it was just really fulfilling and satisfying, like sitting in that start line, knowing that yeah, I just had such a good, like, done so much to get there, and then like knowing that I was in a good position to really lay down a performance that, like, I knew before the race that I was going to be proud of the race that I was going to do. And the same, I think most of the guys in that fall could say that, and like we were all proud of the race in the end. But I think it was just really exciting to like be at the start line in the position that we were. So that's really cool.
Absolutely. And for those listeners who don't necessarily know the difference between like a Cox 4 and a Coxless 4, could you talk through like some just, I guess, rowing knowledge on the role of a coxswain and then the difference of like a boat without a coxswain?
Yeah, so there's only one coxed event now in the left in the Olympics, which is like the eight. So every other boat is running without a coxswain, and a coxswain's basically, I guess if you know golf, it's like a caddy. So they're not necessarily a coach, but they're essentially a coach, and they can really help guide and do take a lot of the thinking away from the athlete and away from the rower, and then really also just yeah, get the best out of the rowers. So without a coxswain, you have to do all that yourself. And so each person in our boat has a different role. Each person kind of takes a job away that the cox takes a job that coxswain would have. So for example, our stroke sheet was steering with his foot, and then I make the calls during the race that a coxswain might make, but I can't make him nearly as clear or as well or as motivating because I'm out of breath and I'm trying my hardest to row. So, and then on top of it, like I'll sit down 3 seats and take a few calls and different technical focuses and stuff that again normally take the role of doing. So yeah, I guess it's good that we have four of us because then we can spread the load of what the coxswain would normally do. But in the small boats, you got less and less people and more jobs you've got to do without the coxswain. So.
I'm laughing thinking about how out of breath, like the value of a good breathing like rhythm, and then to take that out, you're like, okay, on this stroke I'm gonna say something, and my God, it needs to be extremely impactful. Like, I guess if you're trying to think, and you don't have to give away your secrets, but like a really motivating one, if you're like, all right, this is gonna hype them up, what's a call that you make in the Olympic final?
Well, I mean that's so dependent on the boat, and I guess it's just you because you're out of breath and you only have one or two words each time, so I guess the motivation comes from what the crew what they think of these words that when you say them. So I guess a really motivating one, just even just saying believe or something. Our Vasi caught it in the race, and it just really enough to say encapsulate everything that we needed to hear in the moment. And that's the thing. Cox could say a couple words. A Cox could say one word too, but for us, usually the word will be almost like we almost know a word's going to come, but it can still mean so much. It means something to our crew, and each crew will have a different word that meant more or less. So for us, that was a really impactful call. And in the moment, I guess we did believe, which is cool.
That is so cool. And a funny experience that I had from watching your race, because I was in the States like during the Olympics. And as you know, they love to hype. There's a lot of hype around the Olympic team. But with your race, like obviously you guys got silver and the Americans got gold. But the way they spoke about your boat, they were like, well, the Kiwis were this. Like that, it's crazy. Like you had your experience of that race. But I, as like a fan and a fellow Kiwi, have my own memory of your race, and then hearing it from the other athletes who were like, man, like they were coming for us, like we had to give it everything, hearing it from their experience, it must just be crazy to think like you were one of four people who made that race happen, but it was shared by like at least the 5 million of New Zealand, and then people from all over the world watching it. Like that whole gravity and post-Olympic kind of just awareness is something that like now follows you. Like you're an Olympian, Olympic medalist, like that's for life. So just kudos to you, because I don't even know where I'm going with that, but just like that must be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, well, something that really so that the idea of sharing that experience with so many people, and first of all, I love sharing the medal with people. That's the best part about having the medal, is being able to give it to people, and really especially young kids in New Zealand, and just lucky to go to school too, and just really share that experience with them. But well, I probably my favorite part is just hearing people, friends of friends, and it's funny, a lot of my brother's friends and stuff. I met them, some I hadn't even met. They're like, "Oh, I was watching your race, and we got the whole my whole office was watching it too." And I was those is so amazing, hearing stories of where and when people were watching my race, and it really highlights it makes it really special to hear people, took their time to watch it in odd hours and in odd places. And they really just, I can't get the smile off my face once I hear those.
I remember setting my alarm. It was like somewhere like 4 or 5 a.m. It wasn't too bad, but like then my housemates, who were all American, we're there and we're like yelling and going, and they're like, go New Zealand, like cheering it on. So it's that is the beauty and the spirit of the games and why I feel like sport really does bring people together. Because not even rowing, I remember I started watching high jump because we had a New Zealander smash it, and I wasn't into high jump, but now I am. So it's like the value of sport and how it brings others together is pretty cool. And also for you, like being back in the States now, you have all these other regattas and these experiences to look forward to. Like, I guess having gone from Olympics, does it feel like, and I'm sure it doesn't, but does it feel like less pressure looking ahead to like the college racing season, or do you treat it the same?
I guess like I treat it the same. So I suppose, look, to be fair, like the pressure coming into the Olympics was high, and I guess it meant more for different things like future like funding or for like standing in New Zealand and all these other things that do like that would impact my future career more. And then like I guess what I do in the States doesn't impact what I do at Rowing New Zealand, so there's not that pressure. But at the same time, like I still regard like winning, a national championship as high as winning Olympic medal. So to me, in my like, because I'm usually quite internally motivated rather than externally motivated anyway, like the pressure I put on myself to perform there is just as high as leading to Olympics. So I certainly will feel the pressure the same, and I kind of I like it that way because that makes it more real for me and more enjoyable. If I don't have the pressure, then I don't know why I would be doing it.
Thank you. So the crux of like why I do the podcast is tall poppy syndrome. And not that I think it's good nor bad. I just love asking people like you who are literally certified tall poppies of like, okay, firstly, how would you define what tall poppy syndrome is? And then how do you interact slash experience it? So first part of that question is how would you describe, no right or wrong answer, how would you describe tall poppy syndrome?
Oh, I definitely think it's different in a lot of places. It could be defined differently in different places. But like, I guess in New Zealand, it's like if someone was really excelling in something, anywhere from academics, sport, or financially, or something like that, then like they can, stand out from the crowd, and people, I guess the crowd doesn't like that, and finds ways to, chop them down for the metaphor of like bringing them back down to the same level as everyone else. And I guess not supporting and celebrating their achievements. So that's kind of how I define it.
Exactly. And like, I guess from that, how have you, how do, like, how do you experience it? You just said you're very internally motivated, which is great. But like, do you feel like you've felt or experienced any of negatives or positives from the tall poppy syndrome?
Yeah, so personally, I guess I've been, lucky enough not really to have noticed it too much in my career so far. I guess a part of that might be going to America as well, where a lot of like, the years where I spent, I guess progressing like in the sport, I was surrounded by a culture where it was, especially at our college, but also in American society as a whole, like. I would say almost the opposite of all Bobby syndromes here. Like you're very much celebrated for standing out and having achievements and being different. So yeah, sometimes in New Zealand and stuff, I would be like, I wouldn't always want to a bit like say what I do or like say the achievements. And that wasn't just because I felt like someone would cut me down. I just but yeah, I personally haven't. But I guess I've seen examples of it, and like especially when it comes to. We're living in Cambridge. There's a lot of amazing athletes there, so like, everyone's used to seeing athletes, and it's cool because it does feel like we're celebrated there. But like, if you kind of stand out in a different way, like if you want to take your sporting achievements and make it into like a go so that like make a personality out of it, make a profile, make a brand, and like really like kind of excel in that sort of front as well, you can. That's where like people I think seem to get chopped down a lot in New Zealand, and and as an Olympic athlete, it's like you're kind of just like told to get your get your achievements, get your medal, and then like well obviously you've got to be humble about it, but then so don't lap it up. Don't like just like play it down and then just not like continue on like after you get your achievement. Just yeah, you've had your last one in the time in the limelight, and then just go back to what you normally do. So that's probably what I've seen.
Interesting, thank you. And I kind of two thoughts come from that. It's like, one, we have a lot of role models, especially in New Zealand and Australia, where you think like the All Blacks, which is a rugby team. It's like they work hard in silence, they let success be their noise, they just get on with it. And I think we do see a lot of that exampled, and I think there are a lot of benefits to that mentality, absolutely. So, not saying exactly with it's not a good or a bad thing, it's just an observation. But what's so fascinating, especially with sports like rowing or running or swimming, where like it's you don't really play defense, right? Like you can't play defense on another boat. You can't stop them from going fast. All you can do is just try to go faster. And when we do talk about 2Ks, if listeners haven't done that, it is like the most painful thing I think I'll ever, except for a 6K, that might be more painful. Do you do 6Ks or 5Ks?
Six
In
guys,
what, yeah, that extra Ella Toa, she was like part of the reason I went to Rutgers. I remember when I first turned up, and in New Zealand you do 5Ks. She was like, Grace, do not underestimate that additional K. Like, it will get you, and it certainly does. But all that to say, I actually had Martin Toomey, and he's the chef de mission of the Winter Olympics, and he was talking about. What he notices a lot with athletes is there isn't that chopping down because people are so hyped and focused and obsessed. I think if you're an endurance athlete, you're like somewhat obsessive. That's my personal hot take. But he says like they're so fixated on trying to push the boundaries of what the sport can do. So something like freestyle skiing, there's a lot of substantial ground being made because that sport hasn't been as popular for as long as something like running or rowing. So all that to say, it's cool to hear your approach with Tall Poppy in the sense that like when you're surrounded by people who are all trying to break 6 minute 2K or five, like people are all trying to push towards this goal that if someone else does it, it actually motivates you more. Instead of you wanting to chop them down, you're like, bro, how did you hold that split? Or like, tell me how you did this. Like, I think there's more of an exchange of bring me up with you as opposed to like, let me chop you down. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess like so. Rowing, yeah, rowing's had a long history, but it's, it was more popular, 100 years ago, and it's less popular now. So I guess it's like it almost feels like a small sport again. And, but like, yeah, you have people that are pushing the boundaries, and those people, especially in the rowing world, aren't getting chopped down. They're the ones that are like, yeah, sweet, you're showing the way. Let's like see if we can get there too. And like, and yeah, like I think a lot about rowing is like it needs to progress as a Olympic sport, otherwise it's going to be left in the dust. Like there's a lot of change in how the International Olympic Committee perceives the Olympics and how they want to move forward with it. So if rowing's going to be staying relevant, it needs to progress as a sport, because it's really stayed stagnant in a lot of important and not important markers for the last 20 years. And it really, like having people that are, I guess, like trailblazers in the sport, not only through performances, but also through how they like, hold themselves outside of rowing too. Like how, like if people actually are interested by rowing, that's the only way rowing's going to be progressing. So yeah, not only do you have to push the boundaries of athletic performance and make that really interesting and really awesome, like the racing needs to be tight, the racing needs to be fast. And then also you need someone to root for, you need someone to root against. It's like sport is about stories and about like people watch sport because they're excited by the story of what's going to happen, and they want to be inspired. So you kind of don't really, a lot of people don't get inspired by rowing because they don't know who they're watching. So yeah, I think like pushing the boundaries is so important, and doing it in a way that people can see as well, then that's where it's the only way rowing's going to progress. And I guess I kind of got on a rabbit hole with the question, but yeah, so that's kind of what I see with rowing now.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate that. Thank you. Last like serious question before I sign off and then some personal questions I have as a rowing fangirl. When we think about success, and this is a very stagnant question, so I understand that it might change for you. How would you define success, in your own words, now?
To me, or like in general?
To you.
All right. Success is, two things. Finding fulfillment, so that would be like, progressing, like setting a goal and like really doing everything I could to achieve it, and then having that sense of fulfillment, to me is the success part. And then also, it's that ties into, being the best I can be. So I guess to be fair, like my biggest goal in life is to, see what I'm capable of doing, physically, mentally, everything. And then I guess so that's a huge goal, very arbitrary as well. And then the fulfillment is coming through doing things to, every day, every minute to towards progressing, and achieving that goal. Where it's such a, I guess, big goal that it's too hard to really determine if you achieved it or not. But that's why the success for me is the fulfillment of progressing towards that goal and doing everything I can to see where I can go.
Exactly. And I feel like, well, thank you. And two, part of that is even when we think about the Olympic medal, you were saying before, to circle back, it was part one is what can you do? What are you and your boat capable of? But then also a secondary fulfilling part is then you get to take that medal and show it to a little kid who inspires them. There's a two tiers of what fulfills you with your success is what can you do? And then also the impact that has on other people, which is a little bit of a theme in what we've discussed is you don't necessarily acknowledge in the moment the impact you're having on others, but you're so focused on reaching your success and pushing your boundaries, but at the same time that motivates others, which is why coming back to tall poppy talk and why I do it is to take a moment where I actually just have you one-on-one and pick your brain about what it is you do, because you're so focused on being a tall poppy and maybe not appreciating how much that role models to other people. So thank you, because I know that people listening are going to be like, I love this, oh, that's interesting, I didn't know that. People will learn so much from you just by getting the privilege of getting to hear what's going on inside your head as well. So thank you.
No, thank you. Well, I think it's definitely, you're right. It does take a lot of athletes do it. I'm definitely a culprit too. There's taking time to realize that what, even if we're not, that's not our intention. We can be inspiring different people and doing different things. And and then that's why I want to, I definitely have plans and lots of ideas going forward of trying to give back and get back to my sport and get back to, just New Zealand as well, because I grew up idolizing sport too, and it made me want to, achieve these things, but it also, gave me so much, and I want to give, even a snippet of that back and give start, if I can inspire any kid to go out and chase a big dream, then I think that's the best thing you can do in life. And so if I can pass that on and give that gift to someone else in the sport of rowing or any other sport, then that's, again, that's, I guess, that kind of ties in. That would also be really fulfilling. So I definitely want some plans of trying to give back in the future, and just because I want to keep rowing for a while. So if I've taken so much from the sport, I've got so much from the sport, and I'm definitely willing and wanting to give back a lot as well.
Well, you're already doing it by being on the podcast with me today, because you're giving back to me and then also my listeners and subsequent impact that will have. So you're well on your way. Before my silly sign-off question, is there anything I haven't asked you? And I know that there's probably a lot, but something that I haven't asked you that I should have during this interview.
No, I think especially, I can't think of anything at the moment. But actually, I got to ask you then. You said 2K was the hardest thing, or 6K. Then, well, how does a marathon compare?
Oh, Logan, thank you. I actually was thinking about this. So, listeners, I just ran the Berlin Marathon And literally during that, I was thinking, like, there's not enough like appreciation and respect for what Olympic athletes must go through, because I was nervous for a marathon that there was no stakes at it. It was just like a personal goal. Like you said, how far could I push myself? And I was so nervous for it. And so I was like, performance pressure and performance anxiety needs more kudos. Like, there's the physical part of the Olympics, but then there's the mental. No, you are right. I feel like when there's the phrase, like, it's a marathon, not a sprint, that is like, you cannot underline that. Like, you can't sprint the first kilometer because you're trying to get a marathon done. Like, compared to rowing, there's still that same mentality. Like, you cannot fly and die. If people do 2Ks, like, you can't go all out in that first 200 meters because the last 1800 meters are there to welcome you. So it's like, sort of in some ways, much better than a 2K, because I know from the get-go, like, hey, you can't rush this. But when you start a 2K, you secretly think, like, yo, maybe I'm gonna get a mad PR on this if I go out. Like, but it hits, the wall comes a lot harder on a 2K. But I will say, because you said you had German like heritage, after Berlin went down to Oktoberfest, and that was a different kind of athleticism. but my body right now is definitely not the happiest with me. I should not have done two quote unquote marathons, one running, one drinking, right after each other.
Pure focus athletically, and then pure focus enjoyment.
And you did a half Ironman too, like a few weeks ago.
Start of September. I needed obviously a little break from rowing, and but I also needed to build back into fitness for the cold season. So the timing of it worked perfectly, and I've always been interested in triathlons just to compete in them, and half Ironman was like a good target distance, and so I was able to squeeze it in. It's a funny thing to say, but and I really really enjoyed that experience, and glad I made time for it. So
Do you foresee a full Ironman in your future?
oh, for sure, yeah. I love pushing myself and pushing my limits. So I'd love to do a full Ironman when it could work in with the rowing training. And definitely I want to do plenty more half Ironmans in the future too, because I do like that event distance, and I definitely enjoy it. But being a heavier rower, it's definitely a bit of a load on the body, doing it at like a reasonably heavy weight. So definitely gotta time it right, and not do them too often.
Yeah, the knees are not probably the most like the biggest fan of that. It was like when Hamish Bond went to cycling and then he came back to rowing, but you could just see the difference in like the muscle area focus, because cycling is so different to rowing. By the way, rowing is a full body. It's not an upper body, it's not legs, it's a full body experience. What was like the swim or the cycle or the, I feel like you would be pretty good at cycling from like cross training. Was like running the hardest part for you?
Cycling, cross train all the time. Been on a road bike for a while now, so that was okay. The running, I've just done bits of running here and there. Like, it's definitely not easy as a heavier guy, but like I've spent some time on the pavement, so it's not been too bad. And I've done a couple of half marathon runs before, so I knew the distance was okay. But yeah, definitely at the end of both events it was hard. And then swimming. Just being a water boy, just always in the water, like it was it's a natural environment, and then doing the longer distance swimming was definitely something it took me a few weeks to grapple with. And then but then I only had 3 weeks to prepare, so it was a few weeks to get a hold of it, and then boom, I'm in the race. So it was it's definitely an underprepared one, which I was obviously happy to do, because I paid for it, I booked it. So it was still a very fun experience, and I surprised myself in a lot of ways too, so it was good fun.
Oh, that's epic. I don't know if you'll be back in New Zealand or in December. New Zealand is hosting like the world champs of the half Ironman in Taupo. Well, you won't be back by then, I feel like.
No, I think I just missed it. I was actually eyeing it up as like, oh, good. No, but no, you have to qualify for that and whatnot. I'd love to do it one day. That'd be a really cool experience. But I come back for I'm racing the Christmas Regatta in December, so I do get to come home for Christmas, which would be awesome. And yeah, I guess I think I come back just after, so I couldn't even go watch it, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, you can go back, race the Christmas Regatta, get a bit of a tan, and then come back to the winter up in the northwest. Logan, I am conscious of your time too, so my sign-off question is, if you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be?
Oh, Pink Floyd.
Instant. Tell me more.
I'm Pink Floyd. I'm the yeah, just I don't know, I grew up like having like my friends listen to Pink Floyd, and like I guess like as a bit of a the other generation would listen to it more than my friends, but I just really I don't know, got lost in like the long songs of 10, 15, 20 minute long, and I just love the whole rhythm and cycle to it, and just really I guess connected with a lot of the music, and yeah, it means a lot to me, and it's just always be. I love plenty of different genres, but I guess if I had to listen to one, it'd be Pink Floyd.
Epic. Are you racing at Head of the Charles in a couple of weeks?
Yes, so 18, oh no, 20th of October, so yeah, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so you're racing on the Sunday.
Yeah, actually, yeah, today, 2 weeks.
Look, I'm racing on Saturday, the alumni boat. I'll be
Nice.
up there. We actually have a bit of a problem because we've got too many starboards. No, too
Oh.
many ports. We really should have figured that out. So I'm going to have to try and do a little switcheroo to row starboard. If you hear of a
Nominated.
boat, yeah, if you hear a boat, someone like getting an ejector crab from Rutgers, you're like, that would be Grace.
Look, we usually watch the Saturday racing, so hopefully I'll get to witness it then.
Epic. Well, I'll probably see you then, but Logan, he joins us for his first podcast today, which is absolutely crazy. You have smashed it. You're a high performer, athletically and verbally. But seriously, thank you so much, Logan, for joining the podcast, and I'm so excited to see what you get up to next.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It was, a great first time experience on a podcast, and yeah, no, it was an awesome topic, and just I really like your format and like what you're doing. So yeah, it was a pleasure to be able to come on with you.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest.